Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM. A very Spanish revolution. On Talk Sport.
When I first came to this country more than 24 years ago, most English people knew Spain as a holiday destination with exotic football clubs like Real Madrid and Barcelona that never really related to the sporting English experience. I couldn't even find the weekend results in the newspapers. It has been only in recent times, very recent times, that top Spanish players have opted to come to England during their peak years, and then only a few of them. A trickle which started with the likes of Naïm at Spurs in 1993 and Xavi Ferrer and Marcelino before 2001 now has become a torrent as Spanish football's popularity has risen. Torres, Silva, Costa and Mata spring most readily to mind. Liverpool have had more than their share of Spaniards under Rafa Benitez, and Arsenal and Manchester United started a new trend of signing Spanish teenagers like Cesc Fabregas and Gerard Piqué. The total number of Spanish players in the Premier League has been on the rise for the past decade. 13 Spaniards featured in the whole of the 07-08 season. 29 have already played this season, including Silva, Cesc Fabregas, Santi Cazorla or David De Gea, with that tally rising every year. There have been 12 instances of Spanish players winning Premier League medals, but only three were in the first 19 Premier League seasons. In the years since we became world champions, 9 have lifted the trophy. So the question is then, why are there more Spaniards coming to the Premier League while the majority of, say, Germans and Italians tend to stay put? Besides the obvious argument that there is the monetary draw of England, the ultimate dream for most Spaniards is to play for Real Madrid or Barcelona, and beyond that, a more competitive Premier League might well be the most enticing option. I decided to speak to three players, one from the past, one from the present, and one from the future, and find out how they have adapted, why they came to the Premier League, and what part they have played in this very Spanish revolution. I met Gaizka Mendieta, Mikel Arteta, and Héctor Bellerín. What else? At Iberica, a fantastic tapas bar in London, and we did what Spanish people do, eat tapas and talk, in particular, about what their lives have been like in England.
Mendieta gets it, Mendieta blasts it, Gaizka Mendieta finds the top corner for Middlesbrough.
As far as Arteta, who unleashes a powerful drive into the corner of the net from the edge of the D, and Everton are 2-0 up against Liverpool in the Merseyside derby. The man from San Sebastian has scored.
Gives it to Bellerin, who shoots towards the far corner, and he does.
What a goal.
What a great finish that was from Bellerin on the edge of the area. He caps a five-star attacking display from Arsenal.
Hi, I'm Gaizka Mendieta.
Yakubu's got it back. Mendieta is there! Mendieta makes it more for Middlesbrough.
Hi, I'm Mikel Arteta.
Arteta's won it for Arsenal. Arteta goes for goal! Arteta scores the goal! It's Arsenal 1, Manchester City 0. It's Mikel Arteta!
Hi, I'm Héctor Bellerín.
And in the volley effort, deflected in, 3-0 to Arsenal, and Héctor Bellerín's on the score sheet. 3 minutes into the second half, it's surely job done for Arsenal.
I want to take you back. What did we get here? What's that? Cod, isn't it? Cod with some finer. It's into some peppers and tomatoes.
Looks lovely.
And some black rice. So I don't know if you're still hungry, but there's some black rice here with alioli. But I want to take you back to the beginning. I want to know what your experience in England has been and what you remember exactly from the first day that you landed in England. Starting with the most veteran for now.
Gaizka. Oh, he is the most veteran in Britain. Me, first memories, I remember my first training. It was very intense. We did 11v11 because although I arrived quite early previously, I think we were playing Arsenal home, but my papers, my license didn't arrive in time, so I couldn't play. So we prepared for the next game, and I remember that game being so intense, like non-stop in terms of playing, which it was good because it prepared me to have a taste of what the Premier League is like. And I love every single game. I made my debut against Leicester away, and I love the football since the very first minute.
But exactly the first day. So you landed where? In Manchester or in...
No, I landed in London and then flew to Tisa Airport. Yeah.
And what?
So they took me out for a dinner because it was in the evening. In the morning after, I went to the training grounds, had a meal there in the restaurant. So the training grounds, we were waiting for all the paper to arrive and sign. That day I didn't train. I trained the day after. So I had a view, get to know the players, get to know the manager, get to know everyone in the club, really. That was more an introduction than anything else.
And what was the feeling? What, you were looking around and you were thinking, this is my place now, this is where I want to be?
Well, I loved it because although it's not very big compared to the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, obviously now Man City, the training grounds, for a club like Middlesbrough and coming in those days from Valencia, Barcelona, Lazio, the Barca didn't have great training grounds. Now they've got the new facilities. But Middlesbrough had like 1, 2, 3, about 6 pitches, one indoor, 2 artificial grass, the gym. So it was quite impressed with the facilities. Also very secluded, where, you know, journalists and fans not always available and access to the trainings. So I was very relaxed. I think as a player, I loved it. The club would take care of the players in terms of filtering whoever was contacting you. So different, obviously, how it was in Spain at the day. And my first impression was like, yeah, I love it here.
There's something I want to ask you. I want to ask you why Middlesbrough. But that's a story that is a fascinating story that we'll get into in a little while. But, Mikel, not to the time when you get to Everton, not to the time when that your first day at Arsenal, your first day in Glasgow. When you arrived to Glasgow, what was that like?
Well, I was lucky because I knew what I was expecting. I played with Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League against Rangers. So I played at Ibrox, and I was really impressed. Because at that time, they had some really good players, and the stadium was amazing. So I was already knowing what it was coming. And a few weeks later, they came and they wanted to sign me. But 2 days before I went to Glasgow, I was going to Paris and signing permanently. And Barcelona decided not to let me go to Paris, but let me go to Glasgow because they were paying more money. So I went. I think it was a good experience for me. I knew I wanted to be there for 1 or 2 years because my objective was to come to the Premier League. So I went there. I took my whole family, my father, my mother, and my sister, and we all went there. And we stayed in a very small hotel. And we knew it was a shock as a family, a completely different life. And we met with some of the staff that day, and I couldn't understand a word. My English was bad, but I thought I was going to be able to get some words, and I couldn't get anything. And then I was a bit shocked, and my sister as well, and my mom said, well, this is going to be hard work. But at the end, it was an amazing experience, really nice people, and it really helped me for the next few years here. That previous experience there, it was amazing.
Did you get to walk the town on your first day?
Yeah.
And you were walking around the streets of Glasgow.
We did it very quickly. I think in 15 minutes it was all done. Because at that time it wasn't very developed. And when I arrived to Liverpool after, it was pretty much the same. So I knew, you know, I knew, and I was trying to look at the positives, and there were many positives on that move, but as well family-wise and lifestyle-wise, it was a big challenge.
You had to convince your family that it was a good decision, that it was a good place.
It was the proposal, because when I moved to Paris first, it happened really quickly again, and I just moved with my mom. So the situation between my parents, it wasn't ideal, and my sister was feeling a bit lonely as well, and they got a job for her at the BBC in Glasgow, and she wanted to get involved with that experience, and it worked out really well for all of us. We still talk about it, and we had a great time as a family.
I imagine your parents didn't speak English.
Nothing.
So your mother had to stay in Glasgow, and she had to go shopping.
But they went to some of those open courses, you know, with all type of different nationalities, and they had some very funny and bizarre friends after 3 or 4 weeks. And
who is the most bizarre of the friends they've got?
I don't know. We had Moroccans. We had people from Lebanon at home coming for dinner. So many different nationalities, and they really enjoyed, because they felt like going to university again with 56, 57 years old, you know, and they really improved as well. So it was good.
And Hector, you left home at 16. Mm-hmm. Now, I think people forget what that means. But remind us what that means, actually.
Well, for me, I was lucky as well to make that step, not by myself, but with a player that was with me since we were 8 years old, John Terrell, which is at Birmingham now. And that made it a bit easier, you know, to have someone that knows you, that is your friend, and, you know, you're making a step, but you're not making it by yourself. But it was hard as well, you know. On the first day, I remember just going to a very small hotel, very close to the house we were going to stay in, Dix. So we met with the family. They showed us where we were going to live and everything. And on that same night, I was going to go and sleep to that house. And I remember having dinner with our parents, and our parents were leaving in the morning, and it was very heartbreaking, you know. I remember seeing my mom cry, and I was thinking, I'm only like 2 hours away, you know, I'm not that far. But for a mom, I think, obviously, leaving her 16-year-old son in another country and everything must be hard.
So it hit you at some point? Was there at some point you said, oh, my God, I am 2 hours away in theory, but actually I'm in a different world?
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning, you're always really, really excited, and obviously you're young and you're not even thinking what you're leaving behind, kind of thing, you know. I just wanted to play football. I knew it was a new experience, so I wasn't too bothered about leaving all that behind. But obviously, once you're there for a few months, you're like, oh, wow, that was a big step what I did, you know. I probably didn't realize at the point, but it was always really, really positive for me since the first day that I was at the club. So I've always been really happy, never felt homesick whatsoever. I had obviously the luck as well from the club of being really, really helpful with getting my parents to visit me and all that. They're making everything really easy. So,
is that part of the contract? You put in the contract like 5 visits from my parents or every year or something like that?
I mean, yeah, I know that some people do it, but for... Arsenal, what they said to me is like, whenever they need to come, just let us know and we make it easy for you. You know, it wasn't about the money. I guess for a club like Arsenal, just spending a few quid on a flight ticket is not that much, you know. But it was really nice for the club to see how they were taking care of the players. Even didn't matter the age.
Did they put you in one of those houses where the likes of Cesc Fabregas and Fran Mérida have been living in?
Yeah, it's always... There's five or six houses that do the service, and I was at one of the houses where Theo Walcott was as well as an English player. I was there with Ignacio Mikel. Loads of players have been through that house. We had like a top floor where there was 4 beds. It was massive, you know, and there wasn't a lot of privacy, but
four beds in the same room.
Yeah, in the same room, you know. There was like 4 corners, 1 bed in each corner, you know, with a wardrobe. And I think
all of you players,
yeah, all of us players. And I think it was nice as well, because we had like a Norwegian player staying with us, a Swiss player, and then me and John. And you know, it was nice to you know, make friends just as even before training, you know, because we stayed there for a few days before. So it was a very nice experience, and I got really, really good memories from that house.
What was your English like? Who had the worst English? You all speak, you obviously Hector spoke English at school or learned English in school.
Yeah, but what Mika said, they remind me a lot of what happened to me as well. I used to get really good grades at school in English, you know, so I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to go there and I'm going to kill it. People are going to think, like, yeah, this guy is English. So as soon as I get there, the driver's like, you're right, mate, what? You know, speaking like this cogni English, and I'm thinking, what is that? I don't know, I don't understand what he's saying. So it was hard at the beginning, but then I could, like, formulate sentences and all that stuff, so speaking, it wasn't that hard, but the understanding the different accents and everything, it was tough.
Let me just say there, you, not only you have a Cockney accent, you can actually impose a Cockney accent. Do that again.
No, I'm not doing that again. You can put it on repeat if you want.
Coming up, Hector Bellerin on the difference between English and Spanish football.
It was great, you know, to play every afternoon and the whole stadium be packed, and you're thinking, like, that doesn't happen in second division in Spain.
And Gaizka Mendieta tells us, why Middlesbrough?
All the decisions we made in our careers are football-based. Obviously, you consider your families. Back in the day, I had two kids, but it was great for them to come to England, learn the language, school, education, everything.
A very Spanish revolution on Talk Sport.
Hector Bellerin, Mikel Arteta and Gaizka Mendieta. Three players, past, present and future, sat down with me and we discussed all manner of things, from their first impressions of English football to adapting to life in a foreign land. This is their story.
Your English was decent at the time, Mikel, or...?
I thought so, but because, again, my qualifications at school were pretty good. But after you just notice that you need to start studying, I was single at that moment, and that helped. I think that's a very important thing to be, so you can meet and go dinner or for lunch with some different woman, and that helps because you are really interested to improve.
These are football fans. These are journalists who are these women.
A variety of different profiles, but I think it really helped.
And in your case, did you come with some English, Gaizka?
A little bit. I went to obviously school and then academies, but similar to Mikel, the Boro accent is something that struck me when I got there.
Have you still got it?
Not that I got it or I managed it. It's that I couldn't understand it. I could speak with the foreigners, with any Dutch, Slovakian or Brazilian, whoever, but the English. With the English, it was so difficult. I remember normally someone will ring on the phone on the landline, and regarding any of the utilities or anything to do with the home, I said, send me an email, please. Put the phone down, because I couldn't commit to anything that I didn't know what we were talking about. So it took me a while, even on the tables. When you go with the team, you normally the English get to get on the same table, or if it's like a long table, and then the foreigners on the other side. And when you try to listen and have, you know, a peek what they were talking about, there was no chance. I couldn't understand what they were talking about.
I don't know if you ever thought of this, but we seem to have a facility to learn languages. No idea where that comes from. I don't know if that's the education we're given or maybe the need. We leave our country, so we go abroad and we think we have to be part of this.
Yeah.
Is that how you thought? We have to be part of this and understand this and speak the language. Otherwise, we won't get what's going on with me here. We won't get what all this culture is about. Is that how you feel?
Me personally, I felt really uncomfortable when I wasn't able to understand the people around you, the environment, and you can't really express yourself. You can't get close to people. You can't just affect around the club how you want to do it, how you want to improve things and make yourself more important. And I think it's for me, it's the first thing you should do. And as well, it's a way to send a message to the people around you, like, you respect the culture. I think they make quite a lot of effort to bring you there, and at least the only thing that you have to give back is try to settle in and learn the language as quick as possible.
Hector, did you have a day, a Sunday, a Monday, or a day where you were in training where you thought, what am I doing here? Or that you were sad, or that you were...
No, I never really had those kind of moments, you know. For me, the days that I was in training, I was always... I used to ask my English mom, you know, and I was like, what can I do today? So she was like, oh, you can go to Covent Garden. There's a really nice place in there. Or you can go to Camden Market, and stuff like that. So even though I didn't knew anyone, you know, just to grab my Oyster and go to Central London and, you know, just have a look at all the stuff that was going around. And then when my family would come over, I would, like, show them what I seen and all that, you know. So I've been that kind of person that, I mean, I don't mind doing things by myself. And I've been at 16 and having the opportunity to just... few weekends, you know, go around London, and that, I think that was a great experience, you know, to meet other people as well on the way, because obviously the only people that I knew there was my teammates, but that's what I used to do. So that's why I say I didn't have the chance to be homesick at any point.
And Gaithka, you decided to go to Middlesbrough, and that's far away from the football world, as well as geographically far away from London, say. Was there, deep down, a choice made out of what you felt at the time, not just a football reason?
Well, it was mainly football, obviously. I think all the decisions we made in our careers are football-based. Obviously, you consider your families. Back in the day, I had two kids, but it was great for them to come to England, learn the language, school, education, everything. So it was purely about football. It was purely about... changing my mindset, and after being in the big clubs, seeing from a different point of view, why not go somewhere else where he's trying to grow, make history, have an impact, and bring my experience to that. Obviously, the players that were in Middlesbrough at the time, Juninho, Zenden, Viduka, Southgate, so there were internationals from different countries, Joseph from Cameroon. So it was... Even for me, when the first time I heard about Middlesbrough, was like, obviously I knew because Juninho was there, because Rabanelli went there, Boxing was there, but not much about actual club or the city. But it was definitely about football. It was about bringing my experience to a club where it was ambitious at the time, and he wanted to win trophies. And that was purely what it was about.
So you had been at Valencia, obviously became, when you moved to Lazio, the most expensive player in history at the time. Didn't work out very well at Lazio. Was that at the point where you went to Barcelona? But at that, around that time, when Steve McLaren got in touch with you?
No, he actually did it. I mean, after being at Barcelona on loan from Lazio, I would like to stay there, but Barca was changing, was the new president, the new Chiqui got there as a sporting director. They wanted to change the whole dressing room squad. And went back to Lazio, did the pre-season with Mancini. But both sides knew that wasn't an option to stay there after the first season didn't work as we thought it would. So it was then when McLaren came to the training grounds and we had a chat. To be honest, I didn't think much about the option at that time because there was other on the table that I was considering. And it was after a while when I thought, you know, why not? I spoke to some people. I spoke to Juninho, and I said, you know, change completely direction. Why not?
Did the experience at Lazio and Barcelona hurt you, as in relation to your love for football? And were you looking for a place where you could recover that?
Not the love for football. Obviously, I think we all love football over anything. Otherwise, we would have been doing something else. But obviously, yeah, it hurts your self-esteem, it hurts your pride, because personally, I didn't think one second for the money or anything. I think for my commitment with the club and the team, that's what it takes me to go and take different challenges, like when I went to Lazio, Middlesbrough, or Barca, or even Valencia in the beginning, is to, you know, to get your career in the direction you want. And that was what it made me, you know, go there. And Barcelona, obviously, going back to La Liga, to a club and football that I was more suited to my style, it was a way to enjoy football again, playing. But the love for football is always there. And same for Middlesbrough, it was all about playing and football. In my whole career, it's never been that's the only reason making decisions was about football.
Sometimes I heard players that go through perhaps a long injury or they have to disappear from the scenery of football, and they think that it is a time to reflect, especially if there's still more years in their careers, and they feel sometimes that you do things, especially the latest stage of your career, because you have to, not because you're enjoying it. When you get away from football for a little while because of those injuries or whatever, it makes you recover that love for football. Is anything like that happened to you, Miguel, where being away from football just makes you realise what you have that you sometimes on the day-to-day don't see?
Yeah, I had to turn around things a couple of times when my career was under threat with some bad injuries. But when you love football so much and you're really missing it, you are able to come across and sacrifice many things because you really want to be back on that pitch. But as you said, for me, it's been great to reflect about how much you like what you do, how much you need it, and take the direction you want for the near future and the longer future and prepare yourself. And it's a great experience. Some people have been so unlucky, but sometimes it's a very good thing to stop a little bit, reflect, and okay, you're on the floor now, nobody's expecting you to get up, can you do it again, you know? And and you learn a lot of things from those moments, probably more than when everything is just coming across nicely and everything is smooth.
And perhaps you reflected on that day where you decided to be a football player. Was there a day, or was it part of a process?
I was 14 and I was playing a small team in San Sebastian, and suddenly I had two options: go to Athletic Bilbao or go to Barcelona. And my dream was always to play for Barca. That was my team that I supported since I was very little, and that day I've been selected. This is a very small group. I go there and I was amazed with everything, with the setup, with La Masia, which is the residence for the players, with the environment I had, with the players that I was able to sleep, as Exo was talking with the players that have been really successful afterwards. And it was a great experience. At that moment, I thought, listen, if I do it right, I've been chosen, I've got a good chance. So they put everything on the table.
Who did you share that bedroom with then?
Pepe Reina was sleeping above me. Then Victor Valdez, Iniesta was there, Thiago Motta was there, Babangida was there, Trasoras from Rayo Vallecano, Puyol was in the other room with Xavi. We had some really, really good players, but as well, really nice persons.
On the quiet corner, Iniesta and Valdez. On the busy corner, Motta and Pepe Reina.
No, Victor is quite lively. Victor is very, very funny. Andres had a really difficult time. He was younger as well, and he was a very sensitive person, but he was very liked by everyone, so he had a lot of help, and he was fantastic, and what he's done and the way he's behaved through his career just tells you everything about him.
In fact, he actually came very, very young, at an age that players from outside Catalonia weren't brought in, but he was so good. That's one of the things that people forget, and that's why I was trying to get you, Hector, on your arrival to London, which is very successful, and you are happy. But it's not everybody's case, wasn't it? You all left your countries. You've all been successful, but you heard stories like Iniesta where he cried, where at some point he probably didn't think he was going to make it.
No, but after we used to watch all the games on Saturdays or Sundays. You know, we used to play at 11, and then the other was playing 12:30, 1:30. And every Saturday, you would go back to the resident and say, this guy is going to do it. He was tiny, white. He couldn't get against anybody, but he was the best player every weekend. So you could tell. If he wants to and he goes through these moments personally, he's got every chance to be top.
You're listening to A Very Spanish Revolution with me, Guillem Balaguer. Coming up, Mikel Arteta explains how he adjusted to his new surroundings, and Héctor Bellerín reveals why he's probably Spain's best snooker player. You're listening to A Very Spanish Revolution with me, Guillem Balaguer. Despite the difference from food to music to stadiums, Héctor Bellerín, Mikel Arteta and Gaizka Mendieta chose the English Premier League for football and a home far away from their own. What was the moment, Hector, for you where you had to decide to be a player?
Well, for me, I started playing for Barcelona really young. I started in the Barcelona kids' school, where there's like 200 kids playing against each other every weekend. And then one day, they told my parents that they wanted me to train with the underage of Barcelona. And I trained with them for 6 months. And then they told me that next season, if I wanted to, I could join the Real Academy, the Real Barcelona Academy. So even though you're really young and you're at Barcelona, you would never think that probably you can make it at that age. You know, it's all about enjoying football and playing every weekend. Yeah, you play for Barcelona, but you're still young. And I think it was until I was around 14 that then, you know, agents start to approach you and things getting a bit more serious. Then you get this brand sending you boots and you're like, wow, now this is not just how it was before, you know. But I don't think it was till I was exactly at that age, at 16, which is the age when you either sign a contract with Barcelona, kind of long-term contract, or you go away. It's usually at that age. So when I started getting offers from different teams, I was thinking, I can actually make a living, you know, out of football if I do it the right way. So that was probably the moment where I had to decide where I wanted to do. And you know, that was the moment where I decided to join Arsenal as well.
And Gaizka, you also have a moment, a visit to a shop with your dad where you had to decide if you were going to be a player or not.
Yeah, because I used to do athletics. Well, I play football in athletics before I took football seriously at the age of 15, 16. So, yeah, before the pre-season, obviously my dad took me to the shop to buy these football boots for the pre-season and the season. Back then, one pair of boots would have to last you for a season. Like now for a few months. So the shopkeeper brought these very expensive ones and the cheap ones. So my dad said, well, which ones do you prefer? Obviously I said the expensive ones, because they were the nicest ones, not just because of the money. So he said, well, if you check the expensive ones, that means, you know, spending all this money in these football boots, you have to use them. So obviously he was hindsighted that if I take that, made that decision, was to take football and drop athletics. And so I did. But that was quite late, because I was at the age of, like I said, 15 probably.
Jagielka peels away and goes towards the back post. It's aimed towards Jagielka up there versus Kyriakos, but only as far as Arteta, who unleashes a powerful drive into the corner of the net from the edge of the D. And Everton are 2-0 up against Liverpool in the Merseyside derby.
You all had that first day as well when you get to the first team, to a first team. In your case, Hector will be a first team for Arsenal, of course, at Valencia, and in PSG will be the first team.
Well, Barca as well, because I was in the pre-seasons with them.
Right. So that day arrives when you have to just take your boots and your stuff and put it in a locker or in a changing room with the first team. What do you remember of it, Mikel?
Oh, my pants.
How has changed that now?
Yeah, because I went into that dressing room. Luis Van Gaal was the manager. And he took me to the office. Mikel, you're going to start training with the first team now. I was 16 at that moment. You're going to do the pre-season with us. So I want you to be yourself. Go and you have to respect people, but I want you to be yourself. So I went there and I sit next to Luis Figo. And I had Rivaldo, Guardiola, all those players in that moment. And I was amazed. It was my dream. As I said before, I was a big Barcelona fan, and for me it was a dream came true, but as well you feel very, very insecure.
Who came to talk to you?
Guardiola was the first one. He was very supportive with me, Luis Enrique as well. He was brilliant with all the young players. He was very, very protective, and he really helped, you know, to have someone who commits to yourself and wants to look after yourself and give you advice. So,
what did they tell you?
Nothing, just that's natural, you know. We all been in this situation, so enjoy, you know. That's a dream come true. So just enjoy every moment. We're going to learn, and if you are here, it's because he thinks that you have the level to be here. No one's going to give this opportunity if they don't believe that you have the level to be here. So every day, obviously, you start to get more comfortable, you start to talk to them more naturally. But the first few days are a shock, and you are very, very nervous. Even the night before, in the morning, when you get in your car together, it's a tough moment.
Hector, what you remember?
For me, it was a bit more easied in, you know, like one day they told me, you know, Hector, you're going to train with the first team for the first time. But it was a session that involved a lot of reserves as well. Just, I remember the subs. And that training session, I remember Armand Traore was one of the players there, and I went for a tackle, and I almost break his ankle, you know. And I'm thinking, in the first session, you know. So, but then with the first team, it was always every time they needed players, they would go to the reserves and bring some players in. So, I would have, before I joined the first team in pre-season, I probably would have trained with them like 20 or 25 times already. So on the beginning of the 14-15 season, so last season, it was the first pre-season with me with the first team. So it was the first time that I was in the same dressing room as them, and it's still involving loads of young players, but with the real first team, with the whole squad. And then it got to a point where I started playing as well, playing for the first team kind of regularly, and I was still in the reserves dressing room, you know. So I was a bit just waiting for that moment because I couldn't wait anymore. And then I remember one day I was in the gym, and the kit man VK Akers came to me and he's like, "Well, pack your things, you're walking across the other side, you know," because they always say the dressing rooms from the 21s and the first team are divided by, I don't know, 20 yards, and they say it's the longest 20 yards you want to walk, you know, in here at Arsenal. So I remember that day, like, it was the first, and people like Santi Cazorla saying, like, "What are you doing here?" I was like, "Yeah, this is my locker now," you know. And I've always felt really, really lucky to have people like Mika, you know, in the team. That, as he said, the same talk that they gave to him, he gave it to me when I joined on the first week. And people like Santi or Nacho, especially the people that are from Spain, you know, and you get that relationship with, and they're the people that help you the most. And as he said, we all go through these stages, and it's nice that people like Mika, especially, they do what they did for him to the young players. And I remember that comment that not long ago I said to him, "Thank you for everything that you've done through this stage." And he said, "I hope that next time when you get a young kid from, you know, you do the same that you're doing, because that's how it goes." So that things, you know, that makes you think how important it is, the relationships in the dressing room as well, you know, for a young player to be confident in to play good football.
So you get into the first training session, or one of those training sessions, transitional training sessions that you talked about, and you look around and think, right, I'm faster than most. So I'm going to make sure that everybody sees how fast I am. Is that the back of your mind?
I mean, once you're there, for me, to be fair, I was just trying to stand out on the pitch, but not much outside of it, you know. So I'm not that kind of guy that wanted to be the main guy in the training session. I do my job, make sure I impress the manager, but in my own way. It wasn't until one day, you know, we had this speed test, and it happened, you know. And I think for me as a young player, it was a good thing, because it let people make me known in a way, you know. But I mean, it was a great experience, but I never was the one like, "Come on, I'm here, the fastest is here, wants to race me." I've never been like that. So.
Danny Mills down the right-hand side, driving forward against the Wolves' back line. That's a clear free kick. He's livid, Danny Mills, you know. Danny Mills complains, but Borough are taking this free kick quickly. Mendieta wants it. Mendieta gets it. Mendieta blasts it. Gaiska Mendieta finds the top corner for Middlesbrough. It's 2-2 for the Spaniard. He won't have scored too many better than that in his entire career. What a goal from Mendieta. The Riverside goes wild.
You were one of the early Spanish players to come off renowned players, so you didn't have many other people to compare your experience with. So from those first weeks, months in England, have you got a story that you tell everybody that represents what that England was at the time, or how you perceived England at the time, those first months? What kind of England did you find?
Well, obviously it was the north also, so it's different to what is London and everything. So it was, I was obviously with my family, which that helped a lot. some of the single guys in the team struggle, you know, like Mikkel.
Because
Mikkel
has got the looks,
busy agendas. Busy agendas. The guys, the single guys, obviously stick together, watch the games, but it's quite a difficult place for single players. They struggle. Also because it's not like nowadays, food, everything was difficult. Every friend, family that used to come to see me, either you're bringing ham on and stuff or you're not coming. That's true to the point of that, because you couldn't find anything in the supermarkets. Not even Italian food or anything. It was so, so difficult. And like I said, it was a great experience with the family. I remember 5 p.m, everything, like, it was deserted. Like, everyone was disappeared. You go for a walk and where's the people? Where the shops are closed? What's going on here? So you have to adapt to the different culture. And that takes, obviously with the kids helps, because you get to know people, you take them to do activities or you go to places. Otherwise, that's why I think in a places like that, the single players struggle. But family-wise, it was a great experience.
So Mikkel, Hector, when you ran back home, what did you say? You know, oh, look at this, or look what's happening, or this country's like this, or what shocked you most in the first few months?
When we used to back to Spain?
No, when you were in the first months in England, or in Britain in your case.
Well, Gasca said is a great example. Like, we have a culture that after training you go home, you have your lunch quite late, 2:30 p.m, then you sleep. Then it's 4:35 when you wake up, and I say, okay, now let's go for a walk. I used to go in Liverpool for a walk. It was deserted. It was no one there, you know. And it was a bit depressing. But for me, the most important thing is when you just open your home door and you see your wife's face. If she's smiling, she's happy, I think that's going to be transmitted to the rest of the family, you know. And if she's struggling, I think it's going to make life very, very difficult, you know. So for me, the way they settle is going to set up, you know, your success or your failure in terms of football, because it's a vital part.
And in your case, you're still open-eyed and you're still in awe of this country, and you can tell you have adapted. So you're still at the beginning of that experience. For you, everything, you still must be finding things that are new to you.
Yeah, definitely, of course. But I think what they both said is the thing that shocks you the most, you know, the going out at 5 o'clock and it's dark, there's no one in the streets, there's nothing to do. And luckily, John and me, the family had a son that was 20 years old, and he took us one day to play snooker in a snooker club in Enfield in North London. And that was the only place I think it was open after 5. So I think, well, we took up snooker. We used to play like every afternoon. I think at some point I must have been like the best Spanish snooker player in London, you know, because it was like every single day going there. And I'll tell you, for like 6 months, that was our plan until we started to, you know, being able to drive or kind of have more confidence with other teammates to do other kind of stuff, you know. But it was tough, as they all say, because it's really, really shocking. But, you know, I think we made the most of it.
Someone delivered a title to Fergie, because Mikel Arteta has just thundered one home, picked the ball up around 25, 30 yards out after some missed control by Pizarro, and he has fired it right-footed with a bit of fade and swerve on it. Hart was nowhere near it. City nowhere near the title. It's game over. It's Arsenal 1, City 0.
Hi, I'm Mikel Arteta. I was born the 26th of March of 82 in San Sebastian, Spain.
Signed for Glasgow Rangers in 2003, where he won the treble, before moving to Everton, spending many enjoyable years in the city of Liverpool, and is currently the Arsenal's captain. Mikel is a tactical, creative midfielder with over 280 Premier League appearances, and highlights include helping the Gunners to back-to-back FA Cup wins during the 13-14 and 14-15 seasons.
Thomas Vermaelen and Mikel Arteta are handed the FA Cup. They move to the edge of the balcony and thrust it to the sky. Arsenal win a trophy for the first time in 9 years. The FA Cup belongs to Arsenal again.
The three of you have adapted really well. You hardly have a Spanish accent like some Spanish people have. So you are talking about a half English, half a Spanish person there now. Are you foreign here and are you foreign back home as well? Do you feel that way? Which is one of the dramas of the emigrant. You don't belong anywhere. You belong everywhere, but you don't belong anywhere. Do you feel like that a bit, Mikel?
I think your experiences dictate your personality and how you feel as well about being in certain places. Me, I'm so grateful about the experience that I've been through in this country that partly I feel English, 100%. I have to, because without your experience, probably my life would have been completely different, you know. So I really appreciate what I've been through, how people have been with me, and the chance I've been given to enjoy this fantastic journey. And then life would take you to another place, probably. But for me, they've been 14 years here. That's a long time.
So as El Último de la Fila, a band that some of you may know, says, your country are your shoes.
Yeah. Exactly, I completely agree.
Now, if England had called you to be part of the national team, what would you have said?
They did come. Fabio Capello approached David Moyes when I was at Everton, and I spoke to them, and I was really thinking about it, but it was a lot on that moment, and UEFA or FIFA, I think it was, didn't allow it, so we had to take it to court, and it was a big hassle. But I was half ready to go on that war, but at the end we decided that it was to challenge the FIFA. It was going to be a big story, you know, and as well, my aim was always to play with the national team, Spanish national team. At that time, I was still hoping that one day I was going to get a goal.
Mikel Arteta gets his first goal of the season. The man from San Sebastian has scored. Lead Liverpool by 2-0 on TalkSport.
I remember the Luis Aragonés, there was a friendly against England. Mm. Was it Old Trafford or was it? And we all thought you were going to be called up for that one. Mm. I guess you did as well. Did you get injured just before that or what happened?
There were three times where I thought I was very close, and on two occasions, yeah, once I did my cruciate. And they called me from the national team to wish me all the best and to tell me that I was very close to joining it. But again, I have that regret, but I completely understand why I haven't been, because they've been some fantastic players and probably the best midfielder generation ever. And I accept that probably they are better than me. It's very simple.
So you were part of the setup of Spain, but didn't manage to participate in the successful era. You're too young for it, Hector.
He will.
And you will participate.
Yeah.
No doubt. And of course, Gaica, for you, was a little bit too early. You were part of that generation that should have won something, but didn't. So is there an explanation why?
I think luckily with Spain, there's always been a should have happened before. I think if you ask different generations of players, they all agree that, yeah, you could have won it any other time, any other big tournament. I think psychologically we had this barrier of the quarterfinal. We spent quarterfinal, we'll make it. We'll make it. I remember in my case playing France in one of the Euros, World Cup with Korea. And I don't like to say, but sometimes if you get unlucky, some of the times something else happened, and in one of them something else happened. And we were unlucky not to make it through the semi-finals. I think any team before, for the potential and the players we had, would have made it through the quarterfinals. I think would have reached the final. I'm not saying they want to win it, but would have reached the final for sure. But I don't know. I think we all are part of it. The guys that have been involved, the guys that haven't been involved. We all part of the Spanish football. We all make the other players better, whether if we're in the national team or not. Because when you're there, I remember the first time my name sounded to be in the squad, it was for England Euros with Clemente, and it was between me and Ito from Betis. So obviously some press was saying me were going to be in the squad, or someone said Ito were going to be in the squad. At the end, Ito was in the squad, I was in the squad. But I think these challenges, this sporting rivalry makes you even better player, and that improves the general sort of idea and improves the every player in the squad that's itself. And that's what happened with I think Luis Aragonés, you know, changed completely the dynamics of the national team and how we understood the national team should be, and you know, and pressed the right key and founded the team and the philosophy that we were looking for so long.
There's a myth during the rounds about the national team that it's divided between the Castilians and the Catalans and the Basques and so on. We've got two Basques here, two Catalans here on the table. Can we just kill this myth once and for all?
I think look at the titles, look at the teams, the players, and that should tell you what it's about. As simple as that.
There's never been, has it, a situation where you don't want to play for that guy because that guy is from Madrid and you're from Barcelona. It has never been like that, has it, at any level?
No, in my case, for sure.
You never felt?
No, never. Not at all.
You're going through the ranks of the national team, and it must be almost like going to another club, isn't it? Where you know everybody, where you know the coaches that are ahead of you, the players, because you perhaps have mixed the lower ages. It's like going to another club.
Yeah, it's got that kind of feeling sometimes, you know, but I'm lucky as well to meet up with some of the players that used to play back at Barcelona when we were really young, you know, because I spent there for almost 8 years, so obviously it's always nice to go back, and it's different, you know, because my professional career has always been in England, you know. It's always been the English football, the English kind of mentality and training, so obviously going back to the Spanish national team is a bit hard for the few days, you know. And
why?
I mean, it's just when you train for Barcelona as a young age, it's not the same as when you train as a professional, you know. And the way, I mean, in here there's a lot of activations before training and a lot of gym and a lot of that stuff, but then you go national team and sometimes we can even use one, you know. And in England, I think you must have one gym before you train, a little session to get activated or stuff like that. It's just a different kind of mentality, you know. So it's going to a complete different team, different world. Yeah.
Gives it to Bellerin, who shoots towards the far corner, and he does.
What a goal!
What a great finish that was from Bellerin on the edge of the area.
In the second half of a very Spanish revolution, Héctor Bellerín, Mikel Arteta and Gaizka Mendieta talk honestly about their motivations in football. They tell me why so many Spanish players have found a home in England and what their favourite English food is.
A very Spanish revolution on Talk Sport.
Welcome back to the second half of A Very Spanish Revolution with me, Guillem Balaguer. This is the story of how so many Spanish players have become key to the success story of the Premier League, have made England their homes and gained the adulation and respect of the English fans. We've heard how good Héctor Bellerín got a snooker and how Mikel Arteta came close to playing for England. Next, Bellerín, Arteta and Mendieta assess the future prospects of another Spanish manager coming to these shores, Pep Guardiola.
Mendieta gets it. Mendieta blasts it. Gaizka Mendieta finds the top corner for Middlesbrough.
And as far as Arteta, who unleashes a powerful drive into the corner of the net from the edge of the D. And Everton are 2-0 up against Liverpool in the Merseyside derby. The man from San Sebastian has scored. Gives it to Bellerin, who shoots towards the far corner, and he does!
What a goal!
What a great finish that was from Bellerin on the edge of the area. He caps a five-star attacking display from Arsenal.
Hi, I'm Gaizka Mendieta.
Yakubu's got it back. Mendieta is there! Mendieta makes it more for Middlesbrough.
Hi, I'm Mikel Arteta.
Arteta's won it for Arsenal. Arteta goes for goal! Arteta scores the goal! It's Arsenal 1, Manchester City 0. It's Mikel Arteta!
Hi, I'm Hector Bellerin.
And in the volley effort deflected in, 3-0 to Arsenal. And Hector Bellerin's on the score sheet. 3 minutes into the second half, it's surely job done for Arsenal.
Big difference, the one that you say really marks two different cultures between Spanish and English in football. What is for you? What is the big difference between Spanish and English football? Is it the way we prepare the games, the way we play the games, the intensity, the way people treat their profession? What is it? Okay.
Well, in my days, a lot of big differences from the training sessions, from the preparation, from the professionality of the players, and my experience with Middlesbrough, and obviously the football itself. So it was a lot of a big shock when I got there, and I remember the first game we played away. We in Spain, we normally have a glass of wine with a meal, with a dinner. It's okay, you know, it's even advisable to have one. So I remember asking for that, and I could see from the manager's table someone was saying, like, you're not having alcohol. I was like, well, it's just one glass. So he tapped me on the shoulder and called me to the table and said, look, we can't allow one glass, because the guys, if you have one glass, that takes to another one and to another one, and so it's better not to have one. I said, okay, I understand that. But then while we're having fries and fried eggs and the ketchup is there, and why we're not having proper meals? While we have pizzas after the game, while we have chocolate bars and all that stuff. So there was quite still like a long time from where Spain was. Obviously now it's changed completely, and we changed through the time as well. So a lot of things different. And in the play, the game was so open, so many chances, so many spaces for especially attacking midfielder. Sometimes in games in Spain, you wouldn't get one chance. In England, you get lots of chances every game. And we're lucky to have good players in the team, so by playing the ball and possession, I really enjoyed it. But it was so different.
Chronologically, it should be you, Mikel. Now, what differences did you find at first, and how
that evolved? Again, when I joined, it was probably a little bit before that, guys. I even joined the Premier League, but they were miles behind in terms of lifestyle and what is demanding for a top athlete. They were miles away from the Spanish culture. Again, the sessions, in my opinion as well, setups, the technical level as well, and the tactical level was right behind. And obviously, in the past 10 years, they have a lot of influence from many different cultures and nationalities and coaches, and I think that gap has been closed very much. I think now the biggest difference, I think we have still that cheekiness comparing to the English, you know. And it's not to cheat, but it's just to be right on that limit.
Gamemanship, a little bit of gamemanship. And don't call it cheating.
I think we are still, you know, and it's not only a Spanish thing, probably South Americans as well are a little bit in front of English. But here they love, you know, to be so clean and to be, you know, so... I don't know how to describe it, but yes, it's still a difference.
And what did you find, Hector?
For me, the biggest difference was on the first day of training, I remember walking out with the under-18s and, you know, no one was carrying a set of footballs, you know, so I was looking around and see, oh, maybe they must be on the pitch. I'm going on the pitch, I only see poles, I don't see balls, and I asked the coach, like, well, the football, should I go and get them? So no footballs this morning, you know? And I was thinking, that's weird, because especially Barcelona, obviously at a young age, you don't work, your physical side is always ball, 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 and that's it. So that was the most shocking thing for me. I mean, that says it all, you know? Then after, in the afternoon session, we had a bit of a possession and that, but, you know, that first feeling of thinking, like, where did I come to, you know? Like, this is really, really different, but... I mean, then I realized that for the kind of football that you played, you needed that, you know. I remember me and John were the ones behind, you know, the exercises. Like, we had our tongue out, we couldn't like run anymore. And then the season after, I was one of the first ones, you know. So it showed like the improvement. And then, but I think it was really, really needed for the intensity and the kind of football that we play in England.
Well, we'll finish the tapas. There's still some cheese there, by the way, and some croquettes and tomato, of course. Two of us are drinking wine. I won't tell you who the other person is, but I'll give you a clue. He's not a professional player. In any case, before we go to what I think is the thing that convinces you that this is an amazing place to play football, before we go into that, I want you to think. I'll ask you in a bit. You have to tell me one song that's important to you, one book, one movie, and a place, and why. But before we go into that, that moment where you actually walk from the changing rooms in the stadium to the pitch, to the ground, the stadium full of people, the noise, the smell, you only find that in England, do you? So consistently, that noise, do you get it anywhere else, Hector?
I mean, me as a young player and only having my professional career in England, is hard to say, you know, because I've only lived England unless we've played away in the Champions League and that. But for me, my first professional games were at Watford. I've played, had 8 appearances under Gianfranco Zola, and it was great, you know, to play every afternoon and the whole stadium be packed, and you're thinking like, that doesn't happen in second division in Spain, you know. So I mean, the level was also better, but it was just the, as you say, the atmosphere, then finish the game, had loads of fans in the bus, you know, a little 18 years old, you know, coming from Arsenal and giving you that amount of love. I don't think you can find that in any other country.
By the way, when you came on for the first time for Arsenal, who did you replace?
I replaced Mikel Arteta as a centre midfielder.
And what did you think, Mikel?
Well, this guy is trying to push me out.
I remember the boss telling me, come on, Hector, you're coming on as a centre mid. And I started like, laughing because I was thinking, nah, he's taking the 10 years. Like, no, seriously, there's no other player. So I had to come on. And he's like, listen, just listen to the defenders, you know, to tell you what to do in defence. And then when you have the ball, just play easy. So I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to try and do. And then it turned out, you know, 1-1, we won in the penalty. So I think it was a successful debut, yeah.
So you have been a centre midfielder. Well, that was a short-lived career, wasn't it, though?
Very short.
And Gaifka, you've been different countries, you play for different clubs. That feeling of walking into an English stadium must be unique.
Yeah, I think you can find definitely that same feeling that you find in the English or Premier League stadiums. I said that I've taken English friends to Spanish games, and they say it's incredible, it's unique, it's different. I think the obviously the character of the fans is completely different. You definitely can find, you cannot find the respect that there is for the players, the way you could just walk out the stadium and go and get your car, whether you've lost or you've won, and the way, I think the cultural side of the players as well, the fans, sorry. The way they know everything about you. They would tell you, oh, you scored that goal against, remember when you played the Champions League or when you played that. That sort of culture, which comes with the English character, is not in Spain as in general as it's in here. But that noise when you hear a throw-in, I remember that game, debut against Leicester, a throw-in near the box. People standing and clapping, it's like, no, it's only a throwing. And it's like miles away. But that's how they live it, and it's, that's, you can't see that anywhere else. Definitely.
Delaney playing the ball down the left side for Crystal Palace. 0-0 the score on TalkSport. Chelsea need to win, remember. Zaha, oh, it's clipped back towards punch and shoot. What a block by John Terry as he pulls the trigger punch, and it's still alive inside the area. Across goes Much, and he thrusts it right the way through the box and out on the other side. But what a chance for Crystal Palace. Zaha with a little touch. There was the deflection which took it through to Punchin. Punchin was free on the penalty spot. He was driving the ball goalwards, and then out of nowhere, the blue flash of John Terry to block it.
World-class defender. World-class defending.
You're listening to A Very Spanish Revolution with me, Guillem Balague. Next, Bellerín
Arteta and Mendieta assess the future prospects of another Spanish manager coming to these shores, Pep Guardiola.
A very Spanish revolution on Talk Sport.
Hi, I'm Hector Bellerin. I was born on the 19th of March of 1995 in Barcelona, and my favourite English food is fish and chips.
Bit of space for Bellerin to run into. A chance to cross into the near post. Olivier Giroud is there. Stunning save by Pantilimon, and Giroud can't do the follow.
Bellerin started his club football career in the youth teams of FC Barcelona. He moved to Arsenal in the summer of 2011, signed his first professional contract in July 2013, made his competitive debut away to West Brom Albion in the third round of the League Cup in September 2013, coming on in the 95th minute as a substitute for Mikel Arteta. A short spell on loan at Championship club Watford followed before returning to Arsenal. He scored his first goal for Arsenal on the 1st of February 2015 in a 5-0 win against Aston Villa.
Gives it to Bellerin, who shoots towards the far corner, and he does!
What a goal!
What a great finish that was from Bellerin on the edge of the area, which was hit like an Exocet missile.
Was selected to start for Arsenal in the 2015 FA Cup final, helping the team to a famous 4-0 win against Aston Villa, and was the sole Arsenal player listed in the 2015-16 season's PFA Team of the Year.
Interception by Bellerin on halfway. He's put Arsenal on the front foot here. Ball eventually sent out wide towards the right. Alexis Sanchez, decent cross into the centre, looking for Giroud.
Whoa!
And he meets it firmly and guides it beyond Jack Allen.
You're listening to A Very Spanish Revolution with me, Guillem Balaguer. Héctor Bellerin, Mikel Arteta and Gaizka Mendieta, three players, sat down with me and we discussed all manner of things. Next, we hear what music motivates them ahead of a game.
Xavi Hernandez told me once that if the Camp Nou had the noise of Goodison Park, they'll win every single game. Do you agree with that?
It does make a big difference. I think he set up everything on a mindset to the players that create a different flow, a different, I don't know, willingness to win and energy around the team. You know, when you just get a gimmick, it's that momentum, you cannot stop it. And it's very hard to find in different countries. Paris is a capital, but it's a little bit different to other capitals in Europe. I think when that stadium really wants to push the team, it's got the power to do it, but on a daily basis, I think you can't compare any other country or league with the Premier League.
Right. The song.
I mean, this is going to sound a bit different, to be fair, but my granddad, he's always been a really good singer, you know, so for my 20th birthday, he actually made a song about me playing football, you know, and that was my birthday present. So, you know, usually before big games and stuff like that, you know, I go and listen to it. And, you know, it's kind of emotional. It's a really nice song, not too long. But, yeah, that's my song. That's my favourite song.
What does the song say?
Well, it's a bit, you know, obviously...
As a granddad,
you know, seeing his grandson, he puts in a song like, I'm here, God, you know, the God of football. But, yeah, it says something like that, like how the grass admires me when I run or something like that. You know? I think it's really nice. It's really nice. Yeah.
Has he got a good voice then?
Yeah, really good voice, yeah.
Gaizka?
I'd say Perfect Day, Lou Reed.
Why?
I think because of the lyrics, because it's a song that you can listen, and I've listened so many times before games, so it reminds me of those preparation in the bus from the hotel to the stadium, and yeah, football memories.
Manchester United reeling here, and Middlesbrough just slicing through them. Mendieta is through here on the right-hand side. Well fouled. No one's coming to him. He's taken the shot. Oh, what a goal! What a goal from Mendieta, 35 yards out. It's moving away from Van der Sar. The keeper had no chance, but Middlesbrough are leading Manchester United. Mendieta with a magnificent goal.
Oh, I'm glad I spent it with you. such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on.
Yeah, I've got two. I've got one very famous Spanish singer, Julio Iglesias, you know, and my father.
You look like him a little bit.
No, my father used to always put that song, and this one song it talks about how hard it is to get to the top, but how much harder it is to maintain to at the top, you know. So he always insisted that, bear in mind that, okay, you've done very well to get there, but what is coming is much harder. And the other one is the Gladiator song, and because we used to play a lot at Everton just before big games, and we used to have Tim Cahill and all this on board, just like pretending to fight, and 1 minute before the start of the game we used to put it on, and it creates a great atmosphere. So I really like that song.
Fellaini, Pienaar, Osman is in the middle, Baines, can he provide another quality cross? Chance here, Arteta, it's there! Mikel Arteta in injury time for Everton! The crowd has gone crazy!
David Moyes does create very tight groups, and of course Everton is not Arsenal. The expectations may be lower a little bit, but Everton is a place where the fans want you to perform and want you to give absolutely everything. And you did have a very good group working together. Was that perhaps the most enjoyable football, not so much you played, but you were part of?
As a group, we had a tremendous dressing room, because ability-wise, we were pretty average, but the difference was on the character of that team and the spirit that David built over the years, and it really created something special.
Now, we're going for a book, so all of you read. So should we start with you, Mikel?
I don't have a particular book that I will highlight. I love biographies about top elite sportsmen, as well about some top financial gadgets, and I read different type of books, but I wouldn't highlight. I really like biographies.
There's a great biography on Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, you did.
Written oh, yeah. by, let me think.
Oh, yeah, that was mine.
It's on Amazon. You can buy it.
But you were with Pep Guardiola, and you and you're friends with him. That step from the Bundesliga to the Premier League, how do you see that going?
Another challenge. He's shown that he's adaptable. And that was a big task for him to move to a club where they won everything the previous year, and he still managed to convince those players that play in a different way they could still be successful, and they have been really successful in the last 3 years, and this year they have again a great opportunity to be the top team in Europe, and for sure the first in Bundesliga. So I think it's going to be great for the league to have someone like him.
And Hector, there is nothing like what Pep Guardiola is trying to do with this team. I mean, Simeone influences the team, again, in a huge way. But Pep Guardiola is trying to organize the attack at so many levels, as well as trying to play the whole football in the opposite last third. That's is unique. I mean, from the distance, what you see it like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think coming up through the ranks of Barcelona, you know, you can see loads of things that he puts on the pitch, but he's at a complete different level. You know, the complexity of the movements, but then at the end of the day, it looks such a simple football. I think that's what makes him great, and I think Johan Cruyff said that sentence. You know that. The hardest thing is to play the easy football, and I think that's one of the things he's making, seeing it from the outside.
I'm going to come back to you for the book, but before that, of course, Gaizka, you have played with him. He was a leader, he was a captain, with or without the armband, but did you see him becoming such a meticulous and successful coach?
Meticulous, yes, definitely, because he was, even when he was a player. Successful, I don't think you can determine how successful someone can be, like when you see the likes of any other players or managers. But definitely he will be someone that he would try to change football or have his input in football because he was such a believer of the his philosophy and Barca philosophy. So definitely you could gather that he was going to be successful, but again, how big, I think always surprise you.
And you're looking forward to seeing what he can do with City?
Yes, very much so, because I think Premier League is quite a unique league in terms of football, in terms of what he's been doing for Bayern and Barca, obviously trying to do it with or replicate it with Man City, a team that he needs or for sure is going to bring new players, how these players are going to adapt to him, how the Premier League is going to adapt to him, how he's going to adapt to the Premier League. It's going to be so exciting, definitely. Yeah.
Hector, the book.
The book. For me, it has to be a book by Cesco Spar, that was the handball coach of Barcelona for a long time. And I don't think the book's translated to the English. It's called Play with the Heart. And I just... 14, 15 years old, one of the coaches at Barcelona, Victor Sanchez, he's Fiorentina as an assistant now. He was the first coach that introduced us young players to the psychological side of the game. Started with little stories and things like that. And he told us that whoever wanted, he could read that book. And I think that's one of the books that, you know, painted that picture in my head that football is not just about your feet, you know, it's in your head. Most part of it, and I think that's one of the books that probably helped me the most to be where I am right now.
And in fact, for coaches, it's about managing not only the feet but the head as well. Mm-hmm. So out of the coaches that you had, can you think of one motivational speak that that really affected you, that really helped you somehow, and can you share it?
I mean, that's hard to say, you know, because every game has got a different kind of message and stuff like that. But I think not just the coaches, but we've had, I think it's important also from the players, you know. And this year, I think Peter Cech has been one of the players that he's stand up in the dressing room, you know, and give really good speeches as well as Mika, you know. But, you know, to have someone coming from another club and on the first year, you know, feel that confidence and give such clear message to, especially for players like me, young players that we want to learn, and it's important that we get this example for players. So he gave a few very good speeches this year.
And in the volley effort, deflected in, 3-0 to Arsenal, and Hector Bellerin's on the score sheet. 3 minutes into the second half, it's surely job done for Arsenal.
Hi, I'm Gaizka Mendieta, born the 27th March 74, born in Bilbao. And my favorite English food is any English dessert.
Manchester United reeling here, and Middlesbrough just slicing through them. Mendieta is through here on the right-hand side. Well fouled, no one's coming to him. He's taken the shot. Oh, what a goal! What a goal from Mendieta, 35 yards out. It's moving away from Van der Sar. The keeper had no chance, but Middlesbrough are leading Manchester United. Mendieta with a magnificent goal.
Gaizka Mendieta. He signed for Boro in 2003 and enjoyed a successful four-year stint in the Northeast, winning the Carling Cup in his first season at the club. He made 62 appearances and scored 4 goals for Boro.
Yakubu's got it back. Mendieta is there!
Mendieta has retained the affection for Teesside after making the move from Lazio, where he had become the world's most expensive footballer after the Italian team signing from Valencia for £30 million in 2001.
Mendieta pulling strings once again in the Middlesbrough midfield. The talent of Mendieta, as good today at the Riverside as it was at the Nou Camp last season.
You're listening to A Very Spanish Revolution with me, Guillem Balaguer. Despite the difference from food to music to stadiums, Hector Bellerín, Mikel Arteta and Gaizka Mendieta chose the English Premier League for football and a home far away from their own. We've heard how good Hector Bellerín got a snooker.
The thing that shocks you the most, you know, they're going out at 5 o'clock and it's dark, there's no one in the streets, there's nothing to do. And luckily, John and me the family had a son that was 20 years old, and he took us one day to play snooker in one in a snooker club in Enfield in North London. And that was the only place I think it was open after five. So I think, well, we took up snooker. We used to play like every afternoon. I think at some point I must have been like the best Spanish snooker player in London, you know, because it was like every single day going there. And I'll tell you, for like 6 months, that was our plan until we started to, you know, being able to drive or kind of have more confidence with other teammates to do other kind of stuff, you know. But it was tough, as they all say, because it's really, really shocking. But, you know, I think we made the most of it.
And how Mikel Arteta came close to playing for England.
Fabio Capello approached David Moyes when I was at Everton, and I spoke to them. And I was really thinking about it, but it was a lot on that moment. And UEFA or FIFA, I think it was, didn't allow it. So we had to take it to court, and it was a big hassle. But I was half ready to go on that war, but at the end we decided that it was to challenge the FIFA. It was going to be a big story, you know, and as well, my aim was always to play with the national team, Spanish national team. At that time, I was still hoping that one day I was going to get a call.
I met Gaizka Mendieta, Mikel Arteta, and Héctor Bellerín. What else? At Iberica, a fantastic tapas bar in London, and we did what Spanish people do, eat tapas and talk, in particular about what their lives have been like in England.
Gaizka, the book?
Book, I go for Nick Hornby, and not Fever Pitch, which he was very good about football. I go for High Fidelity. It's a book that I read in one day, that I just loved it.
And it's got to do with the fact that you love music, of course.
And the fact that the music is involved, obviously, yeah. I know a lot of people with record shops, so it was very identifying with a lot of friends that I know. Yeah.
Can I say one of the greatest days of my life was sharing with you the stage on the Cavern, Liverpool?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
One of mine too, yeah.
So there was songs that I composed that were played there by Best Boy Grip and King and Skulls, yeah. And then you and I chatted. But then, of course, the whole thing finished with you DJing for the
people. Me DJing in the Cavern, that was highlight, definitely. Somewhere like the Beatles, obviously is not the original, but still the sentimental side of it, part of it, was incredible. Yeah, so thanks. Yeah.
My pleasure. London is wonderful, and you all have lived or live near London, but Liverpool, the Cavern, Liverpool is a special place. It's a unique place. Everybody that goes to Liverpool has to go back. Do you go back, Mikel?
I've been there a few times, yeah. I had the chance to play there a few times as well after I left, but you really leave something, some great memories, and it's got a special atmosphere. The fact that it has a big history related to music, I think it makes it special. I think the fact that it's got two big teams in the same city and the way they confront each other, it makes it special, and as well the people. So it's one of my favorite places for sure.
You are an example of for many Spanish players that come to the Premier League, and many have been coming for the last decade or so. Anybody has got a reason why is there so many Spanish players that do come and adapt to the Premier League?
I think we find it, obviously Spanish players in general are very professional, which is something that it helps us to adapt to any culture really. The football style, I think, he helped us with the right managers. Obviously, I think Rafa helped also to Benitez to change that, because a lot of coaches used to play more the English football with the long balls and stuff. But since that have changed, I think we find it kind of easy to adapt to the football that he's playing here.
Hector, one movie.
One movie. I really enjoyed the Invictus movie. Probably, I don't know if it's my favorite, but you know, I think the message that it gets across, I think, is a really good one. You know, the unity of a country through a sport. I think that is a very remarkable thing that happened in history. But I think it was very well pictured in that movie.
Do you hear? Listen to your country. This is it! This is our destiny!
about how you spent 30 years in a tiny cell and come out ready to forgive the people who put you there.
I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Mikel Gaizka, are we seeing a mature player or are we seeing a future coach? Because he does talk like a bit of a coach, doesn't he?
Both. Maybe we've seen both. A very mature future coach.
Exactly.
Never know.
Mikel,
I think
one movie.
Gladiator again is one of my top films for sure.
Why?
I don't know, the way it makes me feel. And there are certain moments in the movie where you just attach to the screen and you really feel like you're living the story.
My name is Gladiator. Father to a murdered son. Husband to a murdered wife. And I will have my vengeance.
Today I saw a slave become more powerful than the Emperor of Rome.
They said you were a giant. I shall cheer for you.
At my signal, unleash hell.
Am I not merciful?
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
I'll make it easy and I go for the movie of High Fidelity, which has nothing to do with the book, because it was filmed in Chicago and the book is obviously based in London. But again, it's that link with the music and the other part of football that is one of my passions.
With a great John Cusack, of course.
John Cusack, yeah, amazing as usual.
Touchstone Pictures presents.
How's Ian? He's growing on me. He looks like he could grow on something.
John Cusack, Jack Black, Lisa Bonet, Joan Cusack, Eben Yila, and Lily Taylor.
Obviously, I know how special Laura is. I would hate it if I lost her. You know what I'm saying, G?
Get your patchouli stick out of my store! Get it! Get it, man!
Think about it, Rob. Okay?
High Fidelity.
I'm looking for a record for my daughter. I just called to say I love you.
Do we look like the kind of store that sells I just called to say I love you? Go to the mall.
What's your problem?
Do you even know your daughter? There's no way she likes that song. Oh, is she in a coma?
I will ask you about a place, but before that, and rounding up the conversation, we are in the year, I don't know, 2000, and in 30 years' time, 40 years' time. You're now 60, all of you. What would you be doing when you are 60, Mikel?
Who knows? You know? I hope I'm doing what I plan to do and what I'm enjoying doing, you know. That's for me the best thing. And I have my family close to me, and I've been able to create a good environment for my kids and my family to grow. But I don't know what I'll be doing.
Have you got a plan or not?
For 60, I don't have a plan for the next three, so imagine.
Hector?
Yeah, for me, it's hard to say, you know, because still a long way to go. But hopefully, kind of what Mika said, you know, close to my family. Hopefully in a warm, hot place, you know.
By the sea, by the Costa Brava.
Yeah, that'd be something nice. That'd be something that I think about it. But probably that'd be place and occasion.
Similar answer. No idea what I'm doing next month, so I don't know what I'm going to be doing in 60. But I'm hoping to be doing something that I like and I have a passion for, like I've been doing since I retired. I never thought I would be doing all the things that I'm doing at the moment. You would ask me as a player. So same now, if you ask me about here in 20, 30 years, I'm hoping to be doing all the things that I've loved and make me happy.
Arsenal 1, Liverpool 0. Hector Bellerin with his second of the season coming on 36 minutes. It was good play down the right-hand side, laid back to him by Ramsey, and Bellerin, the right-back, going in to the penalty area, cutting onto his left foot. There were four Liverpool shirts around him. Moreno seemed more concerned about The Bellerin wanting to cross the ball, so he made sure he got his arms behind his back, which made it easy to just glide around him and then curl it left-footed into the bottom corner on the far side. Hector Bellerin has the first goal of the afternoon. Arsenal 1, Liverpool 0.
A very Spanish revolution. On Talk Sport.
Welcome back to the second half of A Very Spanish Revolution, the story of how so many Spanish players have become key to the success story of the Premier League, have made England their homes, and gained the adulation and respect of the English fans.
Gone in the second half. Naeem! Oh! That was something out of the top drawer.
Lovely ball. Torres lets the ball go around Harper. And the man of the moment, the man in form, Fernando Torres, has just given Liverpool a 2-0 lead.
Scoots it back towards Fabregas. Lovely bit of football. Lovely finish from Cesc Fabregas. And Arsenal are 2-0 in front. It's beautiful stuff from the gunners.
Punched away by the keeper and headed in by Luis Garcia.
And then he's volleyed back in and chipped over the bar sensationally by David De Gea.
Xabi Alonso has made it four.
Onto Silva. Silva going round the goalkeeper, finishing it off. Six. What a finish by Silva.
Oh, David Silva, the magician.
And it's Fernando Hierro, his first for Bolton Wanderers. Shooting low towards the goalkeeper's left. Brilliant save down to his left by Pepe Reina, who puts out a big, strong left arm.
Comes back out to meet you. Oh, he's tapped it in from 7 yards out. So Alex Ferguson's heard of him now.
Into Di Maria, looks for Mata again. Mata with a wonderful bicycle kick pass. Simon Mignolet in front of the delirious Manchester United fan. Fabregas has spotted the run of Costa and he's picked him out here and he's chested it down and he's going to take it beyond Wojciech Szczęsny. And Diego Costa has finished it. He comes through towards Cazorla, heads the ball towards goal, hits the post, comes back to Cazorla and he smashes it home. He came back to the Spaniard and he powered it into the net.
Despite the difference from food to music to stadiums, Héctor Bellerín, Mikel Arteta and Gaizka Mendieta chose the English Premier League for football and a home far away from their own.
Okay, choose a place. A place in the world.
Mike, it has to be San Sebastian. That's where I born. I have my whole family there and for me it's one of the nicest cities in the world. And I always enjoy when I go there. And that's where I'm from, so for me it's the best.
Hector?
For me, any place where I can see the sea. I think I got something for the sea because I grew up always in a place, and sometimes we even play Swansea away, you know, and I look out the window in the hotel and I see the sea, and it's something that makes me feel good for some reason, you know. But if I have to choose a place, it'd be my hometown. Calella is a town 40 kilometers north from Barcelona. I really recommend it if you want to go there on holidays. But yeah, it's a nice place. Yeah, and I just love to be in the beach and in the sun in the summer, and there's nothing I would change there.
Okay.
Yeah, something similar. I grew up always by the sea, so the sea is always somewhere where I look for. But if you can find a place with the sea where, I mean, living between two countries, family in both sides, always here and there, find one place by the sea that it has everyone involved, yeah, you find me there.
I don't want to finish this conversation without bringing three more people on the table. So it's the three of you and me here, of course. But I'd like you to tell me the most important person in your football life. The one that helped you when you needed it most, or the one that took you to training. Mikel?
My wife. I would have to say my parents as well for the first stages of my career, because they really made the effort to be everywhere and be very supportive. But as well, to have a successful career, the way she has adapted and what it brought to me, that calmness, that confidence and that support for me is invaluable. And without her, I don't think I would be in the situation I've been.
Gaizka?
Me and my both parents. My dad, because obviously through his experience and support through all the years in my career. And my mom, because the same, because both always would have been there for different reasons. My dad more on the football side, my mom more on the personal side. But without them, I wouldn't have been where I am, definitely. No?
Hector?
For me, it has to be my family, including my grandparents, you know, because in between my parents and them, they've always made a really good effort. And I honestly, when I was at Barcelona, I can't remember one single game where there was none of my family in the stands, you know. It didn't matter how far it was or against who we were playing. There was always someone there, and I think that's something that not many young players or players can say. And even now, my parents had to move to England because they couldn't support seeing me so far away, and they wanted to come to the games, you know. So I think they're probably the people that helped me the most.
Héctor Bellerín, Gaizka Mendieta, Mikel Arteta, muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Igualmente.
It to Bellerin, who shoots towards the far corner, and he does!
What a goal!
What a great finish that was from Bellerin on the edge of the area. He caps a five-star attacking display from Arsenal with a super strike from the edge of the area, which was hit like an Exocet missile.
Arteta stands hands on hips on the edge of the 18-yard box. One, two, three, steps up. He goes the opposite side. He goes high towards the top corner, and Mikel Arteta has put Arsenal back into the lead in the FA Cup from the penalty spots. It's Arsenal 2, Everton 1.
Heading towards the back line, has found Macarone. Macarone has beaten Upson to it. He looks for Juninho. Juninho's got Mendieta on the overlap. Juninho finds Mendieta. Mendieta! Sublime strike from Gaizka Mendieta with the laces, bottom corner. It's a postage stamp right in the bottom corner. No chance for Taylor. And after 4 minutes at the Riverside Stadium, Mendieta makes it 1-0 for Middlesbrough.
Gaizka Mendieta, Mikel Arteta and Héctor Bellerín. What you just heard is not a football story, but a life story of three guys that as kids they decided to follow their dreams, and as teenagers they left the country, their families, all that they knew, and they became better for it. In fact, after years in England, they do feel a portion of them is English. So this is the story of three emigrants and their very Spanish revolution, but also the story of England. Adios, and see you soon. La mochila que llevamos va cargadita de piedra, pero abrimos ya no viene y está mala condición. Solo nos queda la rumba y una buena bulería, un bailecito cortado. On Digital Radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, a very Spanish revolution on Talk Sport.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.